Oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Amanda L. Meredith presiding. All who have business before this court draw near. God bless the United States and this honorable.
Good morning. I am Judge Meredith. I am joined in the courtroom by Judge Jaquith. Judge Greenberg is participating virtually by WebEx, and we are convened today to consider arguments in the case of Richard A. Stewart versus Douglas A. Collins, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 240270. Before we begin, the court would like to acknowledge that employees and interns from VA's General's Counsel's Office and the Board of Veterans Appeals are present in the courtroom today, and we welcome all of you. Will counsel for both parties please enter your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
Amy Odom of the law firm Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick for the appellant, and with me at counsel table is Jenna Zellner, also Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick.
Thank you.
For the Secretary, Brian Carey, and with me today is Mark Hamill.
Thank you. Counsel for the appellate, would you like to reserve time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, we'd like to reserve 10 minutes, please.
Okay, we'll make that happen. Thank you. Counsel, if you are ready, you may proceed.
Thank you, Judge Meredith, and may it please the court. It was the board's burden to show clear and unmistakable error in the AOJ's favorable finding that the veteran's PTSD alone rendered him unemployable and was therefore totally disabling under 4.16A. And it's undisputed that in this case, the board failed to show Q in the 2022 award of special monthly compensation. Mr. Stewart is now 81 years old, and he has been pursuing the rightful restoration of his benefits for 2 years. As it has time and again, when the board shirks its burden, this court should reverse the board's decision and order the secretary to restore benefits. This is true regardless of whether the board had jurisdiction to review a theory of Q that the AOJ did not first identify. At the end of the day, we have a final board decision discontinuing benefits without carrying VA's burden and without observing the regulatory protections against arbitrary and capricious agency decision-making. As the court itself has said, it would be unseemly in circumstances like this to remand and provide the board another opportunity to carry VA's burden. And this is especially true when neither the secretary nor the board has even suggested that the AOJ's original theory of Q is correct. The court can and should reverse the board's decision. I welcome the court's questions.
Counselor Reefy. Judge Jaquith?
Go ahead, Judge Greenberg.
Okay. Counselor, what would be the specificity required under CUE to satisfy you that the government had done its job? CUE requires that it be pleaded with specificity.
That's true, Your Honor, and especially in a VA-initiated Q proceeding, it's important that the agency give the claimant an actual notice of what is the specific error in the award of
benefit.
Which they
did not do here.
The AOJ did in the initial decision finding Q. However, the board did not. The board did not even address the original theory identified by the AOJ. Instead, it invented its own theory, which the parties agree is patently incorrect and refuted by the Federal Circuit's decision in Gazelle. Therefore, the board failed to carry the VA's burden in showing that the Q identified by the AOJ was, in fact, a valid basis for discontinuing Mr. Stewart's benefits.
Thank you. Sorry, you Judge. Go ahead.
You argued
Judge.
That September 2022 rating decision didn't become final. So the severance decision was governed by 3.105A2. If that's correct, then why would the jurisdictional restriction from Jarrell apply?
It applies because even if the claimant had initiated the queue here, the same rules apply. There's a specific pleading requirement. The VA, especially in a VA-initiated action, has to identify for the veteran what the agency thinks went wrong. Regardless of whether the decision is final or not, it deprives the veteran of the opportunity to be able to build a case as to why there was not actually Q in the initial decision when the veteran is unclear about what exactly the agency thinks went wrong in the initial decision.
If the board exceeded its jurisdiction by considering a Q theory that the RO didn't adjudicate, why shouldn't the court vacate the board's decision and remand for the board to address the Q theory over which it did have jurisdiction?
Because the board did issue a final decision discontinuing benefits without following 3.105A2. And this court's precedent is that when that happens, when the board fails to carry the agency's burden and fails to comply with the regulatory protections against such arbitrary and capricious decision making, the appropriate remedy is reversal. That was not only in McCauley, which we cited, but also in Stern and a plethora of other cases in which this court has come again, has seen similar circumstances dealing with reductions based on improvement and severance of service connection based on a change in diagnosis.
So following up on the scope of the Q theory here, under our case law, a properly pled Q allegation has to identify the particular provision of law that is the basis for the Q theory. Here, both the 100% element for an award of special monthly compensation and the 60% element are contained in 1114S. And VA has basically said, 1114S is the provision of law at play here. How do you view that? Is that the provision of law, or does our case law allow for the provision of law to be more narrowly the elements within that particular section?
Well, I think Jarrell and Andre made clear that it is the very specific legal error that needs to be identified. So in Jarrell, at the RO, the claimant argued that there was an error in the RO not correctly applying 3.307 in the presumptions for chronic disabilities. But then at the BVA, started arguing about presumption of soundness. And this court said that those were two separate Q theories and therefore two separate claims. In our case, the AOJ in the September 22 decision specifically identified 4.16A as where the error lied, that the AOJ in awarding SMC had incorrectly applied 4.16A to find that the PTSD alone was rated totally disabling. That is the only error then under this court's jurisdiction and Andre that the board had the jurisdiction to review.
So on a related note, the secretary has argued that because the RO in its February 2022 decision proposing to sever or terminate special monthly compensation, and then in its May 2023 decision effectuating that termination, it discussed the 60% requirement for special monthly compensation. In your view, did the RO identify any error as to the element, or did it just discuss generally that there is such an element?
The latter, Your Honor. The AOJ simply was discussing the requirements for special monthly compensation under 1114S after finding that there was not a single disability rated 100% because the veteran's PTSD could not be rated 100% under 4.16A because the scheduler rating was less than 60.
So it's my understanding from the secretary's pleadings that they view 3.104C and 20.801A as providing an independent basis for the board to find factual errors and correct them. I think they use the term, it provides the board with original jurisdiction to overturn factual findings made by the RO, even in a Q context. What is your view on what those sections allow the board to do, particularly in a Q context?
Our view is that even if it's true that the board has original jurisdiction to reverse a favorable factual finding under 3.104C, it still must comply with 3.10, 3A2, and it must show that the decision, and in this case, the finding that the board found to be, or actually the board did not even discuss, but the finding, the favorable finding in the initial decision that the AOJ later found to be clearly and unmistakably erroneous, was the finding, it's a material finding that established the entitlement to benefits. So then under 3.10A2, VA must carry the burden of showing clear and unmistakable error and must comply with the procedural requirements of showing Q in a binding decision.
Are the RO determination regarding failing to meet the single 100% disability requirement and the board determination regarding the 60% other disability requirement really just two sides of the same coin?
No, Your Honor, because there's never been, there wasn't an allegation of Q to begin with in the separate 60% disability. The only allegation of Q has been in the total disability rating. And those are two distinct separate elements of an award of SMC. And therefore, in this case, the focus on the finding that the PTSD was rated totally disabled.
What about the procedural prerequisites in 3015E regarding notice and an opportunity to present evidence? Do they apply to this case?
I've looked at this question, Judge Jaquith, and I'm not really clear on that. you said subsection E?
3015E.
Well, subsection E doesn't apply here because this wasn't a reduction based on improvement. It was a termination of special monthly compensation based on what the AOJ perceived to be a clear and unmistakable error in the initial award. So E doesn't apply at all. There's no new evidence showing improvement or anything like that. and it's unclear to me whether the predetermination hearings, rules and everything in I apply to A2, but it doesn't matter really here because the veteran did get notice of the AOJ's initial identification of Q. The problem is that when he appealed the actual termination of benefits, the agency moved the goalposts. When it got up to the board, now there was a new error that the board found to be a reason for terminating benefits. And as the parties agree, the new error identified by the board is an error at all. The law is settled that the veteran's combined disabilities other than the PTSD can satisfy the additional 60% rating requirement of 1114S.
Judge Greenberg, did you have any further questions?
Yes, I do. In as much as your client is 81, it's incumbent upon us, I think, to make a prompt decision. Would you tell the court precisely what order you'd like us to enter?
Yes, Your Honor. We would like the order that the court has issued in many other cases in which the board shirks its duty, an order reversing the board's decision terminating benefit.
Just tell us, given the modest touch on the facts and the law, what precisely should the order be here?
Reversal of the board's decision and prompt restoration of the veteran's special monthly compensation.
Should we include a time limit for restoration of the veteran's benefits?
Your Honor, I would suggest that that's a two-part.
This is a reversal. So what more do we have to do except set a time?
Your Honor, I would suggest that that's entirely within the court's discretion, and I would encourage the court to do what's within its power to ensure a timely resolution for Mr. Stewart.
What I'm seeking is your argument as to what is timely. 10 days, 20 days, 6 months. He's 81. How long should the court give, assuming the court rules that way, give the government to comply?
Your Honor, I would assume that a 30-day deadline would be a reasonable deadline.
All right. That's all I have, Judge Meredith.
Thank you.
Thank you. We, again, request the court reverse the board's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. The parties agree on several matters: that the board erred, that special monthly compensation is not a form of service connection subject to severance under 3.105D, and that the board may reverse favorable findings in this context under section 3.104C. The parties disagree as to the appropriate remedy and the scope of the matter before the board. For the following reasons, the court should vacate the board decision and either remand for re-adjudication or dismiss for a lack of jurisdiction. First, and most importantly, the reversal is not appropriate here because the standards for reversal in cases of severance should not apply to the revision of a final decision based on clear and unmistakable error here, nor should the court consider the standards for in severance cases to overcome the jurisdictional challenge here. Second, as it relates to whether remand or dismissal is appropriate, the matter before the board included implicit and favorable findings in the rating decision below, and thus the board had jurisdiction over those findings. Now, as an initial note, you alluded to this, Judge Jaquith, the secretary has pled that remand would be required if the court lacked jurisdiction. I think that's an error. I think under the appropriate case law, dismissal would be appropriate under Gerald and Andre. So I don't think that materially affects our argument here because our primary dispute is over whether reversal is appropriate. But we apologize to the court and to counsel for that error. And I think our pleadings were otherwise consistent with the case law on jurisdictional limitations. To that, Helen has not adequately reconciled the position that the matter before the RO was not the matter before the board. Because in that case, the board would not have jurisdiction and thus the court would not have jurisdiction. So it is unclear how the court can reverse a matter over which it did not have jurisdiction. Now, turning to the issue of reversal, the reversal is inappropriate because there are materially distinct attributes in severance cases and revision cases, to include specifically the preclusive effect of reversal in those different situations, as well as the specific standards for adjudication, both of which I believe the court has addressed in its prior case law. So with respect to the preclusive effect, in the cases in which the court has addressed severance, it has consistently noted that while the court does reverse the decision, that the secretary is still able to pursue severance of service connection. And that is part of the analysis. I would point to McCauley, where the court observed that fact in its analysis, its severance analysis. So I think that is important. I think we have two judges here that were part of that case, but I think that is important because the reversal in the severance cases is essentially based on an error or inadequacy that would otherwise warrant remand. And I believe that the court considered the preclusive effect of severance in determining that reversal is appropriate in severance cases. And of course, as a practical matter, because there are other opportunities to sever service connection, the preclusive effect is minimized. And
doesn't that reinforce the appropriateness of reversal here?
It does not, Your Honor, because severance may be re-adjudicated, and the secretary has other opportunities to correct that error. And it will be a new matter because it will be based on the present. It will be distinct from the prior attempt, but it is still another opportunity to correct error. In cases of revision of a final decision based on clear and unmistakable error, it's never a different matter under a same clear a theory of clear and unmistakable error. It is always the same facts and the same law. So when the court reverses that decision, that is going to preclude the secretary from forever re-adjudicating or additionally adjudicating that matter.
And well, I think what's that, wrong with that? Well, just a minute, counsel. What's wrong with that? He's 81. What are you going to do if we reverse?
It will, well, if you reverse, Your Honor, then I think it would be clear that under the case law of severance that it would abide by the case law for
right.
severance. So
right.
we're assuming, so, the secretary's assuming, sorry.
So what about remand? How's the secretary going to deal with remand, assuming we go that way, as you argue?
All right, so on remand, it would be returned to the board, or in dismissal, it would also be, in fact, returned to the board. And the board would give it prompt attention and adjudication.
What's prompt and what's adjudication?
It would re-adjudicate. It would re-adjudicate the matter. I don't have the answer as to the specific time frame, Your Honor.
Well,
but it would receive, as a remand from the court, it would receive, you know, it would receive prompt adjudication above and beyond the normal adjudication time frame at the board.
Well, what would you recommend as counsel be the time frame with which it, assuming we remand, that the matter be dealt with finally and to the satisfaction of the veteran? What would you recommend?
I don't have a specific recommendation, Your Honor, but certainly.
Why not?
If remanded by the court, then counsel, again, can engage with the board to discuss the specific matter, specific potential urgency expressed by the court, and to determine the appropriate time frame for re-adjudicating the matter.
Thank you.
But I'd like to.
If I could jump in there, I want to clarify the secretary's position on this. You've conceded that there's error as to the 60% element of special monthly compensation.
Yes,
what is VA's position as to the 100% element? Does the veteran here satisfy that requirement?
Your Honor, that is a, because the board did not address that requirement, I think it is more appropriate, and so it did not provide a basis from which the court could evaluate.
I'm asking what the secretary's position is, not what the court could do as to 100%.
Well, per the record at this point, the secretary's position is that appellant did not meet the requirement, the 100% requirement.
Did not, for the reasons that the RO stated?
Yes, Your Honor, that is our current position, just based on the record. But again, the board has not actually adjudicated that to determine whether it was.
The general counsel's office, did you undertake an assessment of whether this particular veteran's benefits were inappropriately severed or discontinued?
Not.
In determining whether to contest this case or to settle it?
No, Your Honor.
I guess I'd ask, how is that consistent with your obligations under the Federal Circuit's case on Barrett, that VA's obligation in a veteran's case is not to win, it's to do justice, which means to make sure that a veteran gets all the benefits they're entitled to. So if you don't have a position as to whether his benefits were appropriately discontinued.
I understand, Your Honor. We have coordinated with stakeholders within the Office of General Counsel, and believe, like implicitly, I believe that we have determined that in this case, you know, settlement is not warranted. So,
but you're conceding that remand is the appropriate remedy. Does that mean VA is asking for a remand just to provide better reasons for terminating the veterans' benefits?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, there's two alternatives. There's if the court determines that the board had jurisdiction over the matter, then it would be remand for the board to provide adequate reasons or bases
as to why to terminate.
Yes, Your Honor. And if obviously if the If the court determines that the board did not have jurisdiction, then it would dismissal would return it to the board to adjudicate the matter in the first instance.
So I want to follow up on your argument that we don't have enough. The court does not have enough in front of us right now to reverse. And based on your concessions and the various pleadings we have, it appears to me that there are a number of errors that the board made in the decision on appeal. And one you've acknowledged is they were legally incorrect in their analysis as to the 70% requirement for special monthly compensation. They did not address at all the veterans, whether the veteran met the 100% element for special monthly compensation. The board applied the 3.105D construct for severance of service connection, but you've acknowledged that that's not the appropriate construct for terminating special monthly compensation. And I don't know your views on this one, but the board, you've acknowledged that the board should have determined whether there were any favorable RO findings that had to be undone under 3.104C or 2801A, and it did not explicitly mention either of those provisions. So I guess my first question is, do you agree with my list of potential board errors here?
Yes, Your Honor.
So in a termination case, VA has the obligation of showing that severance or termination of benefits was correct. Given that list of errors, why don't we have enough to say that VA did not comply with the law in terminating this veteran's benefits?
Well, so to return to my discussion of the severance cases and the standards for reversal in those cases, the Secretary acknowledges his high burden to demonstrate clear and unmistakable error to reverse a final decision.
But you've essentially acknowledged that you want another chance to try again to provide better reasons for terminating.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, we acknowledge that high burden, but the Secretary, you know, also has an interest and an obligation to correct clear and unmistakable errors, whether they're in unfavorable or favorable decisions. We also acknowledge that it is a pro-veteran system, but the purpose is to provide benefits to those that are entitled and not to provide benefits to those who are not entitled. And so the reversal, given the preclusive effect of reversal in severance cases, in revision cases as here, it is distinct, I think materially distinct from the effect in severance cases. A reversal would preclude any additional adjudication based on, again, an error or inadequacy that would otherwise be a remandable error or inadequacy under the court's general case law on reversal versus remand. And that would, I think, unduly limit the Secretary's ability to carry out that burden. Now, it's not to say that reversal is never appropriate in revision cases. It is when the board has provided insufficiently addressed facts and law, and where the court or the board has sufficiently addressed facts and law, and the court still determines that the board erred. But where, given, especially given that preclusive effect, where the board has otherwise provided an inadequate statement of reasons or bases or other errors, which we concede here, that is, again, I think an unreasonable limitation on the Secretary's ability to correct error. It is also not to say there aren't limits to that in different circumstances, but the kind of giving the board and the VA adjudicators one shot, I think, is too narrow a limitation with respect to revision here.
So you're essentially acknowledging that VA did not meet its burden, but you'd like another opportunity to try to terminate the veterans' benefits.
Saying the meeting the burden, I think, should be considered in the context of providing the adequate reasons or bases, providing the adequate basis upon which the court can assess the board's decision and determine if it erred.
So let me get back to the jurisdictional question that we have in front of us. The RO brought up a Q theory having to do with the 100% element of special monthly compensation. The board decided the case based on the 60% element. And in your supplemental brief, you suggested that because the RO in its proposal of severance and in implementing severance, it discussed the 60% requirement that brings it within the scope of the Q theory that was before the board. So I'll ask you what I asked appellant's counsel is, did the RO identify any errors as to that element in trying to, in proposing and implementing the severance of?
No, Your Honor, our proposal is that the, in the circumstances, the RO implicitly found, actually found no error in that element. So that was a favorable finding.
Under our case law, Q has to be pled with the degree of specificity as to what the alleged error is. So if there was no identification by the RO of what the error was as to the 60% requirement, how could that fall within the scope of the Q theory that was appropriately before the board?
I understand that question, Your Honor, and that may be a weakness in that proposed application of law to the facts here. Also with respect to the notice requirements, which has been addressed. But I would like to note that the secretary's argument here is that's not a does not rely on this. It's not a critical component because the alternative is that if the court is unpersuaded by that application of law to the facts or just disagrees, that would put it into the category of the board did not have jurisdiction over that matter, and thus the court does not have jurisdiction over that matter. And the only matter over which the board had jurisdiction would have been the total disability rating, and it did not address that. And so it should be returned through dismissal.
So are you backing off of the argument that you made in your supplemental brief that 3.104C and 20.801A provide the board with original jurisdiction to have addressed an error that wasn't addressed by the RO in the termination decisions?
We understand it's not the strongest argument, Your Honor. It's a proposal. We understand some of the weaknesses in it, but you know, given the fact that revisions are supposed to be adjudicated as with any other claim, and that there are protections in reversals of favorable findings to include that it must be based on clear and unmistakable error, and then additional procedural protections such as revision or reconsideration of a board decision or appeal to the court, that there you can view it as having all the appropriate procedural protections that would give the board jurisdiction, allow to appropriately reverse that favorable finding. It may not need to be an all or nothing, either one or the other, Your Honor. Again, the secretary has an interest in correcting errors, so there could be a balance where the board sees an error, identifies a different error, and the question is, what does it do with that? Perhaps the board has jurisdiction to identify it, but not the authority to actually adjudicate it, where it must then remand it for adjudication by the regional office.
So let me follow up on those points. Under our case law, and you acknowledged this in your briefing, the board lacks jurisdiction over a Q theory that wasn't adjudicated by the RO. That's clear in our case law. So how could anything that VA wrote in 20.801 undermine or get around a jurisdictional requirement?
That would go to, again, the consideration of whether it is a totally separate matter, a totally separate Q theory, or if it is an element within the broader Q theory as was discussed previously.
Okay, so you're no longer arguing that they're independent bases for the board to-
That is correct, Your Honor. That is our argument. They are not independent Q theories. And again, if the court disagrees, then that would mean that the board didn't have jurisdiction over the Q theory before it, and thus the court would not have jurisdiction.
So I have one more follow-up on the 20.801. When VA proposed that regulation, VA explained in the Federal Register that it was, and those of you who aren't familiar with it, 20.801 says that favorable findings identified by the agency of original jurisdiction are binding on the board unless rebutted by clear and unmistakable error. And VA explained that that provision was largely serving to codify a longstanding practice of the board to not disturb favorable findings or elements of the claim made by the agency of original jurisdiction. Based on your description now, is VA more broad, reading that as a more broad authority for the board to seek out and correct errors?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that it's an issue of seeking out to correct errors. It's if an error is identified, that the board has the authority to reverse a favorable finding under those higher standards. So I don't think maybe that doesn't apply in this particular context, given the particular procedural requirements of revision. That's one matter, but I don't think that it's not a separate or different standard. It would still just be a reversal of a favorable finding in this context under those same standards.
Here, the favorable finding that the board purported to undo was in, or correct me if I'm wrong, was in the September 2022 RO decision that awarded SMC. Not in the decision on appeal. The RO decision on appeal was a terminating SMC.
Right, but that goes back to what is the scope of the matter before the board. If the favorable finding was part of the scope of the matter that the RO adjudicated in finding error in the original rating decision, that would be before the board. So it goes back to whether it was a favorable finding as part of the scope of the theory of clear and unmistakable error adjudicated by the RO.
But rather than take on that finding, the board seemed to accept the September 2022 RO's finding as proper that the veteran was granted TDIU based on a single disability, PTSD. But affirm severance, applying a indisputably wrong definition of the 60% requirement. Isn't that tee up reversal perfectly?
No, Your Honor.
Completeness of that failure?
No, Your Honor. Even assuming that the board's finding or determination related to the additional disability requirement over which it may not have had jurisdiction, but would warrant reversal independently, there is still the element of clear and unmistakable error which would be determinative in the total disability requirement. And so I think the court could reverse on one finding, but still need to remand on the other finding because the board didn't adjudicate that properly. And it is still an issue that would need to be properly adjudicated by the board in the first instance. So there could be a split reversal with a remand if they were both distinct theories. But again, that would overall still require a remand to address the total disability requirement, which the board didn't.
Counsel, what benefits are this 81-year-old veteran presently receiving from the VA?
Specific benefits or monetary?
Yes.
Or?
Yes, specific benefits.
TDIU, Your
Any?
Honor? Yes, Your Honor. Several service-connected disabilities, which were then underlie his entitlement to TDIU, and then obviously here he was denied or was originally granted special monthly compensation. Those are the benefits.
And
I'm not aware
of
other benefits.
Specifically, which do you propose to take away?
What is being taken away is special monthly compensation.
How much is that?
That is all. How much is that in terms
of
monetary?
Yes.
It is approximately 'So this is not in the record of proceeding, but it is part of the record. I don't know. Counsel, if you
Well, I'm asking the question. So just
the termination of SMC reduced the monthly payment from approximately $4,000 to approximately $3,600 a month.
Is that what we're fighting over here? That reduction?
Your Honor, I think the dispute is larger than this particular case. It is about the standards for adjudicating these matters regarding distinct legal matters, distinct legal effects between severance and revisions. And so in this particular case, it has a specific monetary effect, but that's this particular case. It would have broader implications, Your Honor. If I may move to another,
Isn't the lesson of Macaulay, Stern, and Hedgepeth that when the secretary fails to meet his burden of proof, that we don't send it back for another try at prettying it up, recasting the decisions that were made? We reverse and restore benefits, and that may have some limiting effects on the ability to proceed with another severance, but there's the path of doing the right thing in the right way and having the benefits restored until that is accomplished, if it can be.
Again, Your Honor, I would just go back to severance and revision have different standards. They do have different, significantly different preclusive effects. And again, there is, as Judge Greenberg pointed out, there's the circumstances in this case, but there can be other, obviously numerous other circumstances where the preclusive effect is different and it may be more. Again, as a legal matter, revision essentially makes it as if the entitlement never occurred and the effective date goes back to the original effective date of where there is no entitlement. And that can have secondary and third order effects of if it's a rating, say rating, that could affect potential TDIU in that time frame. So it is practically and legally a distinct matter for which the secretary argues reversal is not appropriate in these circumstances. My time is getting short. If I may address a different scope of the matter related to Macaulay, we actually, on reviewing appellant's supplemental brief, we would agree that the adjudicator in these circumstances must consider the alternative theories of entitlement underneath the requirement to determine a manifestly different outcome. So we would agree on that. We were persuaded by their argument. However, we need to establish what is the standard for that inquiry. And in Macaulay, the standard is, because Macaulay is about severance and anchored in the present, it's a consideration of alternative theories of service connection anchored in the present. But clear and unmistakable error is not anchored in the present. It is about clear and unmistakable error in the original rating decision based on the law and the facts at that time. I think it would be inappropriate to embed or to consider to include an inquiry that's based in the present time or at the time of the original decision as if it were the original inquiry into a Q inquiry. So the inquiry needs to be whether there was clear and unmistakable error in the original rating decision with respect to consideration of alternative theories of entitlement. And I think that's materially different, because if it's just considered of, we consider it as of the initial decision, that's a ordinary factual finding over which the fact finder has broad discretion. Well, with broad discretion, that implies that there can be reasonable disagreement on that. Well, the basis and the standard for clear and unmistakable error is that reasonable minds cannot differ. So we would just ask the court, and because this, if the court remands this or returns this to the board, that will be a standard by which the board may have to adjudicate it. And although here, appellant doesn't make any allegations that there were any reasonably raised theories that, that were not adjudicated, or reasonably theories of entitlement that were not adjudicated. But I think that would be important if the court returns it to the board.
Judge Greenberg, did you have anything else?
Nothing. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. For the foregoing reasons, the court should vacate and the board decision and remand the matter for re-adjudication or dismiss the appeal for lack of jurisdiction.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Judge Meredith. I think the secretary's late concession here on McCauley is really significant. There was a theory that was raised at the initial award that the board didn't consider in the Q decision, and that was the theory that the 100% or that the PTSD alone was 100% disabling. Under McCauley, then that's reversal. That's the end of it. Quickly, I just want to talk about the court's jurisdiction. Of course, the court has jurisdiction here. We have a final board decision under 7252. Whether the decision complied with 3.105A2 is a matter that has been presented and is necessary to this court's decision under 7261. So all of the jurisdictional prerequisites for reversal are here. And as far as dismissal goes, the secretary's argument seems to be that the there's an actual Q theory matter that's just kind of sitting in purgatory at the board, and the court should endorse this purgatory status of this claim. If it's there, I would query why the board hasn't acted on it. The VA filed their brief in November. And so far, there still has not been a decision, another decision forthcoming from the board on what is allegedly another Q theory, another matter just sitting there that the board should have decided in the first place. And then lastly, I just want to speak quickly about the secretary's new res judicata argument. I would point out that the secretary has not and cannot point to any case law that says that when the AOJ identifies a specific Q error, the veteran appeals and the board does not address that specific Q error, there is the res judicata would prevent the secretary from coming back. In fact, there's no case law that says when the claimant presents a specific Q theory to the AOJ and the board erroneously adjudicates another theory that this claimant cannot go back with that original theory and get proper adjudication of it. And if there are no other questions, we would reiterate that the court should reverse the board's decision here and order a reinstatement of benefits.
Judge Reimer, did you have anything?
No.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. The case is submitted and we will come down to read counsel.
All right.